It's a great pleasure, and we'll talk more after he plays his first number here with great pleasure, Colin Pinto Martin. Thank you. is Colin Pinto Martin, and I am mesmerized. I don't know if you could see me watching you.
I could very much see you watching.
And so many questions I want to ask you. You know what occurred to me?
Yes.
I don't know if you saw me moving my fingers.
I did. I thought you were going to jump in and start playing with me.
Well, it never occurred to me. You should know that Colin Pinto Martin had two mallets in each hand.
Yes.
And it occurred to me, watching you play, you know, mallets are like fingers. It's as if,
well,
and it occurred to me, did anybody ever sort of come up with prosthetics that you could put on your hands to play?
Who was it? Yeah, Tim Burton did. Edward Scissorhands. You know? Like, that's kind of the idea, where if you wanted to have five full ones, but I think they'd be a little too sharp to play on the marimba.
Yeah.
But we have, I think less than fingers. The problem is they go so far from your hand, right?
Yeah.
So like with your hand, you're used to grabbing stuff. You're used to how long your fingers are.
Well, that's what I was thinking about. And you can't really get the dynamics with your finger. But...
And so it's more like imagine that you have chopsticks, right? And then you're trying to, how hard it is to eat rice with chopsticks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, get rid of the bowl of rice and pull up a piano and then try to play the piano using the chopsticks. And that's kind of an introduction to what marimba.
But everybody starts playing the piano by playing chopsticks.
Oh, well, maybe there's something there. I didn't even think of that.
You know, it all comes around.
Synergy.
Now, first, tell the name of what you just played.
Oh, that was Etude in D by Pius Chung. Very nice piece. I like that a lot. It was written specifically for marimba by a marimba player. Who is alive today? And so the instrument isn't that old, you know? It just started within the last century or so, taken off.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I mean, in terms of like classical music, you know, I bet there were people banging pieces of wood very long time ago, but in the form that we see it today with like resonators and things like that, in Western culture, it's just been about a century since we've started using it.
Well, I was thinking too, that it certainly isn't standard for an orchestra to have a marimba necessarily, or does a percussionist have marimba chops per se in an orchestra? I don't see how one
I know
could.
A few percussionists in general who don't, but no, and I know tons that have way more than me. If you're looking to play in an orchestra, you definitely have to be able to play marimba, because this is, I believe that marimba is a percussionist's great chance to express music to the utmost degree.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go and play for an orchestra, in fact, let me show you an example of something you might
sure,
play for
here,
an audition.
I'll hold that for you. Colin Pinto Martin is here, and handmade percussion is a venture of his that we'll talk about too.
So this is just a short little intro of what something you might hear in an audition before. An orchestral.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to audition Colin. I'll turn my back, although he's the only one here, so I know it's him.
Something along those lines, where you hear a little Bach more, mm-hmm. It's a little slower. So that's more something that you would hear in a setting of an orchestra. Now, you obviously might not necessarily play that on stage unless you're being featured, but yeah, there's definitely that type of... type of playment there.
Yeah. Now, this marimba, I've been looking at it. I've been thinking about handmade percussion.
Yeah.
I see that we've got some Schedule 40 PVC down here. That's the
for those of you that don't know what that is, that's usually the sewage line in the house that takes all the water out to the street.
Yes. Did you build this?
I did build this. This was an early prototype, so I don't know how many people out there have ever seen Iron Man. This would be the marimba that he keeps in the basement and doesn't wear outside. This marimba was actually built out of, if you could imagine the frame of the marimba, if you bust a hole through your wall and you look at that wood that's supporting your house.
Yeah, it looks like joists in
our
house.
Yes, it is pine. And so this is what you would see holding up your house and structural. So we were just trying to figure out what can we make and how can we keep the expenses down as much as possible?
Marimbas, buying a marimba from, you know, a marimba maker.
Yeah.
I would imagine they must
be a legitimate marimba maker.
Yeah. I didn't want to say it quite that way, Colin.
You know, someone who's established.
From the marimba factory. I would imagine they're in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, so it's anywhere between $8,000 to $16,000 to get a marimba. The problem is, you know, we just can't afford that.
No,
you know?
And so the idea of making a good playable instrument, there's a lot to like about it, actually, because it gets you very intimate and familiar with it. It looks, crafting this must have taken...
Oh, well, yeah. So we talked about the frame here, and if you could imagine at home, imagine a big triangle, you know, big on one end, small on the other. We'll talk about that in a second.
I hate to say it, but it almost looks... like a coffin. It's about a person's length.
Yeah, yeah, about a person's length.
But it's about a yard at one end and about maybe a foot at the other end where the smaller keys are.
Yeah, and it just looks like a big set of pianos. And actually, hint, if anybody wants to build a frame, go ahead and take some from your house existing.
In fact, if you've got a room that's like 8 feet wide, yeah. you could have a built-in marimba
in
your house.
You could adjust the marimba to go straight from stud to stud. So, but then the problem is the keys. So while we have pine that holds up your house and is very strong, there's a difference between that and hardwood. So we consider pine to be very soft, mm-hmm. right? And in the music or in the woodworking industry, a wood that's generally known to be harder, that's more common you'll see in high-end furniture, is oak. Right, and I brought a piece of oak with me today. And Roger, if you could if we could have that held up right there.
Yes, here's some oak.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, do you want to mallet against?
Oh, yeah. Here, hold on. Ready?
Okay.
So that's kind of what it sounds like when you hit oak with a mallet. It doesn't sound too good. In fact, I can get it right next to a mic and show you. So that's a hardwood for a furniture. So. As you can tell, that's not really the sound that we're going for, so we have to go even more exotic and find wood that's even harder than that. And I have right here with me some what we call padauk. And listen to the difference when I hold up just a block of padauk compared to a block of oak.
Wow.
So instantly it changes into something that has some form of tune. Now, you'll notice that's pretty high than what I played. In fact,
I'm hitting it against my head.
Still a lot of sound. There's a lot of resonance inside of there.
I just want to try the pine again to be sure it's not my head.
No,
it's the
let's
wood.
Try. Oh. Yeah, it, no. Yeah.
It's definitely the wood.
That's good. All right, now here's another piece that sounded a little different.
No, wait, that's the same
so
length,
that's a little
but it's
higher.
Higher but
well, it's a little bit
little,
shorter.
Yeah.
So, and in fact, you'll notice that it is a lot higher than what we normally hit on the marimba. And the reason is because it's just right now a rectangle that's about as long as my forearm. And in order to get a sound like this, what I have to do is I have to cut an arch out of the bottom of it. So if you imagine, have you ever seen the Colosseum in Rome?
Mm-hmm.
How it has those arches that support?
Sure.
That's about the same thing that I have to cut out of the bottom of this. And when you do that, it drops the pitch of the piece of wood because it lets the wood vibrate more.
Oh, I was wondering about vibration because if you have to have a hard wood, I was wondering how do you get wood that's stiffer and harder to vibrate?
To vibrate. Well, so that's the trick. And that's where we see a lot of technology coming into play today, because back in the day when marimbas weren't as popular, it was easy to find wood that's both hard and at the same time vibrates well.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that's also now endangered. And so it's very hard to get a hold of the best wood that you can use to make a marimba. So a bunch of people like myself were reaching towards other woods, other sounds, and even plastics to synthetically create this sound that we
last
hear.
Week we had a group of handbell players. There were 15 people, and they also had I'm going to call them wood blocks, but I was astonished because they were not wood blocks.
They were plastic.
Yeah, they were some sort of polymer. They sounded great, and I went over to look at them, and I wanted to play them a little bit, and I couldn't believe how good they sounded.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. They do make these now. I have this different piece of wood here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what that.
This one is a lighter one.
That's
in
got
color,
the arch cut out,
and it's
too.
Got the arch cut out already. And this is actually something called canary wood, and it's called canary wood because it actually the people who found it when they were hitting it. Yep, it's still nope. Oh. He's hitting it against his head. Unfortunately, you have to use a mallet, but it does sound a whole lot. It just sustains. So I'm going to hold this up to the microphone, and I'm going to let it sustain for as long. And this is without what we call a resonator that we'll go on about later.
Wow. And that is just so you know, that's Colin hitting a piece of wood.
And it's about almost the size of my whole arm.
looks like a bed slat.
Yeah, a bed slat. That's a good way to put it. And this guy, the canary wood, is just sounds so great. But you know what? I'm scared because it's not as durable as the Padauk, so I don't want to break it. So I'm not sure if that one's going to be a good candidate for a marimba, but we'll try to find out here.
It seems pretty unique that you're doing all of this experimentation because...
And expensive.
Unique. I can imagine. I can imagine.
I'd like to first thank the... there's a trust that's been donating to the marimba making. It's called the Dan Martin and Cheryl Pinto Trust. No coincidence that if you combine their names, it's Pinto Martin, and that's my same last name.
Interesting.
But
my
parents have been graciously donating a ton of money for me to be able to try to experiment with this, get this off the ground, get it up and running. Really, this is like the lifeblood of my industry.
I don't know your mom, but I know your mom has to be also, but your dad is, you know, incredibly supportive of the arts and musicians. And I'd like to think they'd be considering anybody doing this, not just you.
It's
remarkable what you're doing.
Dan Martin's done a lot over at Carnegie Mellon. He's currently the dean of the College of Fine Arts over there, and he's just been fully supporting. I'm like, hey Dad, you want to come over, grab some pizza, hang out with us? He's like, I got to go to another performance. It's just all the time he's just going out and doing art. So yeah, but they generally, but it's just all experimentation and working. It's just like everything you do in life.
Do you think anybody else is doing this kind of work?
Making marimbas like this? Yeah, I think there are people out there that are doing it. Doing it to the extent where I'm trying to make it as affordable as possible to people in the Pittsburgh area. I have yet to be able to find someone who'd be able to sell a full 5-octave marimba for $2,200. Which is the price point that I kind of hit with my students. And the reason is I'm not trying to make money off of this. What I want to do is have them have this type of experience with them in their house all the time. Because for me, music was what kept me grounded growing up. And actually, I have another piece right here that I'd like to play. And it's kind of like that. I don't know if you've noticed from your interactions with me, I'm a little hyperactive. You know, I get distracted easily.
I like to think of you as energetic.
Yes.
Lively.
Yes.
You and I share that. So I try to be calm.
So this next piece is actually kind of like that. It's about, it's got this controlling factor, this beam, boom, be do 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 dee. And it's just this constantly beam, boom. And then it gets interrupted by these jazzy outbursts, you know, and then they come together to make this awesome melody at the end. And so this piece, you know, it's almost therapeutic in the way that I play it. So this one is actually a rotation number one, and I'm going to go ahead and play it for you here.
Did you write this?
I did not write this. Okay. This was not written by me. It was written by Paul Samut. And so this one is actually, he's got four rotations, possibly five, and this one is one of my favorites. So here it is, rotation number one.
Excellent. I'm going to get a picture up on Facebook while Colin's playing so you can see this marimba. ¶¶
Colin Pinto Martin, and I just put a picture of the marimba up for you to look at it. I'm just fascinated looking at the components. It strikes me as unusual that somebody who plays as well as you and has such a incredible ear is also a good woodworker. is that an unusual combination? So, I guess it's stereotypical for me to say that, but
it's interesting because you know you pick how expensive you can hit it. Yeah, it's fine.
I'm amazed at I'm looking at every bit of this instrument and realizing that you made every piece here.
What's interesting about it is I grew up and my dad obviously was in theater growing up. He did his undergrad as a theater major. He starred in many musicals playing, I don't know if anyone knows this, he's 6'9", about 320 pounds.
Yeah, and Colin's not much beyond that or shorter than that.
Yeah,
and weight-wise, I don't
so,
think
yeah, so. He played the giant in any production that has a giant in there, they
That's
would
6'9".
Call
now you're like 6'5",
6'4", 6'5".
Okay,
so
yeah.
I'm not as, I can't really get that quite as good a role as that. I'd be kind of like Jack's older brother in Jack and the Beanstalk, you know. So
you might still be growing.
Yes, I might. Never know. So the thing is, he would work in the shop a lot. He would build things, and he'd always have us out there helping him build things. And so we got this knack for just construction, both my brother and I. In fact, my brother does construction management in upstate New York. And then I kind of took that and ran with it out of desperation when I graduated from school because I needed to make money because I had a bunch of student loans and I didn't have an instrument. And I thought, well, I could build one for this much or I could buy one for that much. And, you know, the cards fell where they did.
Well, it's really, I mean, you're making this more of an egalitarian instrument. I think that's one of the things, too, because if you're going to play, not just learn in high school or college, but if you're going to keep a marimba as part of your life for the rest of your life, it's probably not the first. When I think of the hierarchy of needs, you know, food mm-hmm. and shelter, a marimba is pretty much way up at the tippy top.
For some people, for me, it's pretty low to the bottom for me.
But you have to be able to afford it, right?
Yeah, that's for sure.
I think of all sorts of things like crowdsourcing, so to speak, making are they called? They're not called keys. What are they?
Yeah, bars.
Keys or bars. Mm-hmm. You can imagine like having, 25 or 30 students and you teach them en masse aspects of how to make these. Or would it have to be made by one person?
Well, so I have two kids, right? And I imagine...
Now, I know one of your older son is about 3 or 4.
Yeah, he's 4.
And you've had another since then?
Yes, and I imagine trying to teach them woodworking on a mass scale with 20 other of my 4-year-olds. And I'm like,
I'm thinking of teams.
That would only be worse. You know? So, there are tons of opportunities and options for this. Because at the same time, it's not only teaching music, but it's also giving people the opportunity to use basic skills and concepts and problem solving because you have a plan that you have to implement and follow. You have to be precise in the way that you take your measurements. If you do one measurement that's slightly off, you know, it's kind of like an airplane. They have their measurement, and if they're slightly off by 1 degree at the start of their flight, by the time they're done, they're going to be in a different city. Mm-hmm. And with the marimba, if you're slightly off one end of the marimba, by the time you use that same measurement at the other end, you're going to be way off. And so it really taught me this ability to look into the details and double make sure that what you're doing is correct so that your end result is actually what you want.
Are marimbas tuned over time? Do they lose tune?
So they do. And in fact, I can use this sample bar. And this marimba is starting to slip a little bit. The reason why it's starting to slip is because I take it out with me a lot. And it's very cold and wet, and then warm and wet, and then mm-hmm. mediocre and dry.
So it's the wood that's picking up moisture.
Yeah, and drawing. The wood actually does go in and out. Usually they drop, and also I'm hitting it very violently on a daily basis with yarn mallets, and so it
does drop. If you did that to me, I would probably change yes. the way I sounded to you too.
Yes, exactly. And so there's actually, when you tune a bar, if I pull this C back over here, I'll use this as an example. We have to tune three notes in each bar. There's what's called the fundamental, and then there's the second partial, and then the fifth partial.
Whoa, okay, so this is interesting. I thought I heard this as you were playing. So when you strike one bar, there actually are three different notes that work together to make the tone of that bar?
Yes. And so here, what I'll do is, here's a F sharp, or let's do, yeah. So that's an F. So inside of that F, we also have this F. And then we also have this high A. And so if I'm going to strike those together now, and you'll be able to hear that. And now you can hear slightly, ever so slightly, there's a little bit of tension. Like, it's almost like if you're at a dinner and someone said something at the other end of the table and you kind of got a little upset and you're like, Just that much of a little bit of a tension. Not a lot of tension, but between this note and this note. And that means that this note up here just slightly came down, the smallest bit. It's fighting a little bit with this F. And so that's what we usually have. Now, to have a good sounding marimba, as long as you have this first two Fs in tune, it's pretty good. If you get this A, this higher one, then that's what we would consider like an excellent marimba and a good tuning measure. So as long as you have these first two, and I'll actually, with this C that I have here, I'll hit it so that you can hear all three tunes.
Huh.
So here's the first. Here's the two octaves up from that. And then here is the E that lives two octaves and a third up from that.
Now, that was all done by hitting the same piece of wood in slightly different places.
Well, so almost slightly different. What, more importantly, what it is it's muting the piece of wood in different places.
Oh.
So if I hold the center of the key, it's going to stop the vibration, a certain vibration. And so actually the different pitches in the bar are created by the bar vibrating in different ways. So it vibrates diagonally, it vibrates horizontally and vertically.
So the part of, by the way, Colin Pinto Martin is here from Handmade Percussion. You're listening to the Saturday Light Brigade.
We get caught up just talking with each other.
Yeah, I know. I'm forgetting that that we're on the radio here. Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it the sweet spot. There's probably a name for it, but right in the middle of that carved out arch, that must be the perfect spot to hear those three tones.
Well, just as much as anything in life, there's a lot of debate about this.
Ah.
Right? Because they do say that you have a sweet spot right in the middle. That's where what we would say the fundamental of the pitch is.
So that's where you hear, out of the three notes, you're going to hear the most
the bottom pitch. Yep.
Of the...
Now, some people say you shouldn't strike directly in the center, but a little bit below the center, because then that's going to activate the other two pitches as well. So to someone who's just listening for the first time, they might say, well, I don't really hear a difference. And yet, to me, since I've played on this instrument so long, I kind of hear the bar come a little bit more alive when I play just a little bit off of the center. Most people don't know this, but with all percussion, almost every single drum, you never hit it in the center.
Well, timpani, which I played,
The PSO still calls you, right?
Yeah, to make donations. But, there's a spot, and it's definitely with the timpani not in the center of the drum.
No.
And most drums sound remarkably different depending on where you choose to hit it. This kind of strikes me. I don't know much about the physics of a timpani, but I do know that anytime I played timpani, I felt that while I was in tune, I was playing notes that were also other, you know, there were overtones and other notes. Yeah. And I suspect it's similar to what's happening.
Yeah, here. Yeah. The problem with timpani is they're so big and they vibrate so much that there's so many different things going on in there. Luckily, though, with the marimba, and, you know, we also have the last thing I'm going to talk about, I guess, for the time that we have is the huge PVC pipes that we have
yes.
jetting out of the bottom of
yes.
them.
These are regular, like what you would see underneath your kitchen sink.
Yeah.
They're like
a little bigger on some ends, but actually we have inch and a half, an inch and a quarter here. Yeah. So inch and a quarter would probably be your bathroom
sink.
You
need to get Home Depot to sponsor you.
I tried. I actually went down there and then I had to wait in line for about an hour and I gave up and I walked out. So it's just normal PVC pipe and I use caps on the bottom. And what it does is if you could imagine, if you've ever gone to Laurel Caverns, and you're in the cave there, and you go, hello, and you try to get the echo going on. These are like little mini caves for the music, for the note. And what I do is I have to cut them to a certain mathematical derived length that perfectly resonates the frequency that the note plays. So for instance, this resonator, will only resonate a C sharp 3, the frequency that relates to that pitch. And watch what happens when I cover up the resonator, what it sounds like. Here it is uncovered.
Oh, okay. He just put his hand between the key and the resonator.
It completely kills the sound. Because what it does is it's basically like shouting down that cave. And I love performing here in this space because even without the resonators, it sounds so alive. It's just got such a good bounce going on here.
And these lower noted keys, it looks like you've sort of done a Rube Goldberg roundabout because there's elbows
yeah.
and twists and turns. And is that to get the right frequency?
So, yeah, so the longer ones, you have to have it be about 4 feet almost. I think it's 53 inches, so a little over 4 feet for the lowest. And the issue is, I need the marimba to not be 4 feet high because I need to be able to play it. So then it becomes, well, how do you figure that out? How do you bend them? How do you twist them? And so it's a lot of making cuts with my saws in the basement and then lining them up and gluing them together and doing this whole interweaving thing. And that's kind of where your artistic talent can
wow.
come out.
Colin, this always fascinates me. You're really a Renaissance person when it comes to what you've been able to do here. How can people support you or learn more about what you're doing?
So I think the biggest thing is come out to our show next week here at the Children's Museum. It's going to be absolutely amazing. We will have rubber balls and dowel rods for children to make their own mallets so they can go home and find as many studs as they want in the walls and play
excellent.
Percussion
there
all
will
day.
Be no absent of absence of mallets.
No, there won't. We'll have a little jam session afterwards. We'll have a bunch of instruments they can come down and play. And we're also going to be performing with another friend of mine from the city, and we'll be doing some great stuff on marimba. It's going to be great. So that's one way to do it. The other way, we actually have a website, handmadepercussion.blogspot.com, and what we're doing there is just trying to get information out. Basically, I think the best way to support the program and to support what we're doing is to just play music. It's to get involved and to take the time to dedicate yourself to something because the reward's great.
Well, and especially in this case, the notion of actually putting yourself into contact with actual physical materials as opposed to something
yeah.
synthetic, something that
yeah.
that's very real. I really admire you for
thanks.
For this. It's
I teach music at Point Park to dancers, like general music. And a message that I left them with before we broke for Christmas break was this idea that We need to know what you think. Today, there's a lot of ways that people can communicate how they feel. And I think now more than ever, the arts are a true valid interpretations of feelings. And so we always try to think, well, I'm never going to be as good as Bach, or I'll never be as good as this. But in reality, we don't need another Bach in the world. You know, we need you who's listening today. We need you, and we want to know what your opinion is and how you express that through music. And so that's really important to get involved and be able to develop those skills, and like you said, on a real instrument.
Well, and we're going to have Colin. I wish we had more time. We're going to have Colin once again play, I think, Clair de Lune.
Yeah, so this piece right here, it's just there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. And I always get really stressed out with my daily life. And when I come home and play this, it works real well. So here's Clair de Lune, a nice calming piece to end on.
And thank you for being with us today. Once again, here is Colin Pinto Martin. Thank you.
Colin Pinto Martin. What a great segment. Look for him at handmadepercussion.blogspot.com. We'll look for you right here next week on the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings from SLB Radio Productions.